Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are trying to wrap up the Virginia ratification debates, and I will have to look at how many more citations that we have to do. I know that we definitely won't be able to get through it today, probably not even tomorrow, but we might actually be able to wrap up this week if we didn't have so much meat in these ratification debates. I would have been done in a couple of days. I know I may editorialize and add a little bit to this, but I don't do that much other than the fact that there's that much to point out. And so I do try to point out some of these key phrases, and we're going to get to some of them. And I just beg, as a matter of fact, every single citation I've given you are key to prove that our Constitution has created not an unlimited government, but has created a hardcore defined government. As pointed out in a couple of debates, twice in Massachusetts, as a matter of fact, that there is a limitation on Congress's ability to create laws that aren't applied to them. In other words, immuning them and removing them from the oppression that they are placing upon us, such as a retirement system. We have Social Security that they've bestowed upon us so graciously, and yet have removed themselves from this. But I might add that they unconstitutionally gave us that gracious program called Social Security. Now, when you hear me say that, most people start running for the hills thinking, oh, gosh, we're going to lose Social Security. What is, we're going to lose our benefits that we've paid into. No. We have to actualize the end of this. Until we have that conversation as adults, we are going to allow unfunded liabilities and that very particular program to be our demise. Ah, but if we actualize it, and we understand what we need to do to close this program out and end it once and for all and send a message to our children and our children's children that they will no longer be straddled by the debt of their elders. And so it is debt that will destroy a nation. It is these concepts of entitlement that rots the nation from within. And so we want to provide you with the empirical data that the federal government and or the general government has only these enumerated powers. If it is not within the enumerated power, show me in the Constitution where the federal government was enumerated the power by the states, where the states delegated the power to the federal government to create Social Security, to create a retirement program. As nice and as noble as that may have been, that's what it is. It's just nice and noble. But it is unconstitutional. And we cannot exist if we allow the Constitution to be violated. We may have lost virtue in this nation, but I believe there is still that core belief within all of us that we must honor our obligations and we must honor the contracts that we have made. Now, I will tell you that there is a growing sentiment that, honor be damned, that people are going to move forward, that people are going to move forward at the expense of our liberty. We cannot allow that. We have to step in. And as a matter of fact, as I was speaking to a fine gentleman yesterday, we are running out of time, and we don't have time to teach the masses. You know, I have a listener drive, and I ask everybody to try to get other people and try to promote the concepts here. You know, I don't want to limit this message, but this message needs to be targeted to your state legislators. You need to understand it, and you need to target it. And those people who you share this with, if they're not state legislators themselves, you need to get them to start targeting their ire at your state legislators who are doing nothing. Now, I will give you an example that there is in the state of Idaho, there is supposedly a staunch constitutional representative in the very north. And so anybody that's smart can figure out who this person is. And this person's been under fire for, you know, being a staunch conservative. I have reached out to groups that are involved in, you know, the conservative thought, and I don't want to get into names and so forth. But what's really important is, as I have pushed this concept, why is it that your state legislature will not commit to their oath of office and demand a fulfillment of their oath of office of themselves and demand that of their fellow legislators as well as Congress? Sorry for the broken thought there. But if you understand the importance, why is it that these legislators do not want to have to be accountable? And I'm telling you, and I told the organization, this constitutional organization on social media over a year ago, that person, you know, if unless you actually apply pressure to that person, you guys are going to watch, and Idaho and all the rest of the red states are going to watch this constitution crumble. Because if you didn't know it, the progressives, since the beginning of the signing of the Constitution and its ratification, the progressive movement was already established. I did get a chance to mention this, but it wasn't a coincidence in 1776 that Adam Smith and Thomas Jefferson penned two of the most profound documents of liberty, the Declaration of Independence and the Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. But it was not a coincidence that Adam Weishaupt penned and secretly published a document called the Charter for the Illuminati in 1776. That's not a coincidence. There has been a formal organization designed to actually undermine and destroy leadership and governance of the world and bring it under one rule. Now, you may think that, oh, well, this is just another modern conspiracy theory, and I'm here to tell you that this is not a modern conspiracy theory. Has anybody read, and actually this book is out on my website, so you can actually go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, and if you go to the podcast page, and down on the Red State Podcast page, you'll find an article, and let me find it. I want to get the actual name of the author, because I believe it was John Robinson of 1798. He wrote a book called Proofs of a Conspiracy Against All the Religions and Governments of Europe. Now, I'm telling you that was the cradle of civilization, and it is what has influenced the entire world today. And the progressives are marching to the exact same tune of destroying governance and nationalism and creating a one world government. So the plan has been out there, and the concept of a conspiracy theory is not something that just all of a sudden, you know, has been concocted by wild people. Again, Sir John Robinson identified this, and he goes into detail regarding the conspiracy to undermine, and he's limited to Europe, but this is truly a conspiracy to overthrow all world governments. And that's exactly what they're doing. And he talks about this carried on in the secret meetings of the Freemasons, Illuminati, and reading societies. So anyway, the evidence is there. I just wanted to let you know that this show was also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. This is the only show that you can listen to that will give you the academic evidence and the solutions based on the academic evidence. I implore you to please help by getting this message to others, getting other people to get engaged in one, receiving the information, sharing it, and acting upon it as well. These are the things that must be done. You got to receive, and you have to share and act upon. And so we also would just ask that you consider going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, supporting our sponsor, which is right there on the homepage. We don't have time to get into the marketing, but when we do, when we wrap all of this up, we'll take a little bit of time to catch up with all the news, the coronavirus and so forth. And oh, by the way, I was supposed to get these voice messages from Mitchell Nicholas Gerber up on the website. I will be getting that done. So if it's not done by the close of business today, it will be before the weekend. So you want to check out what the new status is and just how bad it is over there. We just wanted to throw that information towards you. And we'll be back with the Virginia ratification debates. And Madison is up in the queue when we come back from these two promos. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, this is Saturday, June 14th. And the significance of June 14th, if you didn't know already, this is where they focused heavily on the militia. I was going to say big time, but that's passé. They focused heavily on the militia. And the one convention that really focused heavily on the militia was Virginia. Isn't it ironic? With all of this talk, with all of this dialogue and discussion going back and forth and debating what the militia's responsibilities are, what they're supposed to be doing, it actually happened on the soil of militia or of Virginia, where they're actually talking about invoking laws that will take away these constitutional responsibilities of the people of Virginia in enforcing the Constitution. Is that a paradox? Is that just irony? Is it a coincidence? What the heck happened? So Madison starts off with this. Mr. Chairman, the honorable gentleman has laid much stress on the maxim that the purse and the sword ought to be put in the same hands with a view of pointing out the impropriety of vesting this power in the general government. But it is totally inapplicable to the question. What is the meaning of this maxim? Does it mean that the sword and purse ought not to be trusted in the hands of the same government? This cannot be the meaning, for there never was, and I can say there never will be, an efficient government in which both are not vested. The only rational meaning is that the sword and purse are not to be given to the same member. Apply it to the British government, which has been mentioned. The sword is in the hands of the British king. The purse is in the hands of Parliament. It is so in America as far as any analogy can exist. Would the honorable member say that the sword ought to be put in the hands of the representatives of the people, or in the hands of independent, or in hands independent of the government altogether? If he says so, it will violate the meaning of that maxim. This would be a novelty hitherto unprecedented. The purse is in the hands of the representatives of the people. They have the appropriation of all monies. They have the direction and regulation of land and naval forces. They are to provide for calling forth the militia, and presidents is to have the command, and in conjunction with the Senate, to appoint the officers. This means ought to be commensurated to the end. The end is general protection. This cannot be effected without a general power to use the strength of the Union. We are told that both sides are distinguished by these great traits, confidence and distrust. Perhaps there may be a less or greater tincture of suspicion on one side than the other. But give me leave to say that where power can be safely lodged, if it be necessary, reason commands its cession. Cession, like, you know, to agree and or to buy into. And anyway, he goes on and says, in such case, it is imprudent and unsafe to withhold it. It is universally admitted that it must be lodged in some hands or other. The question then is, what is the part of government it ought to be placed, and not whether any other political body, independent of government, should have it or not. I profess to have had a uniform zeal for a republican government. What is a republican government? Well, it's a representative government, but again, in the American republican definition, which had shifted in the Constitutional Convention, that representation represents both the people and the states, or the sub-element of government for the government layer above them. So again, I'm just adding to this. The concept at the state level of a republican government would be representation of the people as well as representations of the counties. At the national level, that would be the representation of the people as well as representation of the state. That was the hybrid constitutional republican form of government that was created in the Philadelphia Convention. It goes beyond the concepts and grasp of almost any human being up to this point in time, and it has even been lost since that point in time. People don't even understand bicameral legislative bodies anymore and the whole intent. Well, if they're representing just the people, then why have two bodies? As Madison pointed out, and I read it already, that if we only have representations of the people, then we do have a consolidated government. But not having a consolidated government, by acknowledging the different sovereigns and their different focus and interests, that needed to be protected. So anyway, let me start over again. I profess myself to have had a uniform zeal for a republican government. If the honorable member or any other person conceives that my attachment to this system arises in a different source or from a different source, he is greatly mistaken. From the first moment that my mind was capable of contemplating political subjects, I never, till this moment, ceased wishing success to a well-regulated republican government. The establishment of such in America was my most ardent desire. I have considered attentively, and my consideration has been aided by experience, the tendency of relaxation of laws and a licentiousness of manners, which is what we're witnessing this today. If we review the history of all republics, we are justified in the supposition that if the bands of government be relaxed, confusion will ensue, which is what we're seeing. Anarchy ever has produced, and I fear ever will produce, despotism. What was the state of things that preceded the wars and revolutions in Germany? Faction and confusion. What produced the disorders and commotion of Holland? The like causes. In this commonwealth and every state in the Union, the relaxed operation of government has been sufficient to alarm the friends of this country. The rapid increase of population in every state is an additional reason to check dissipation and licentiousness. Does it not strongly call for the friends of republican government to endeavor to establish a republican organization? A change is absolutely necessary. I see no danger in submitting to practice an experiment which seems to be founded on the best theoretic principles. But the honorable member tells us there is not an equal responsibility delineated on that paper to that which is in the English government. Calculations have been made here that when you strike off those entirely elected by the influence of the crown, the other part does not bear a greater portion of the number of the people than the number fixed in that paper bears to the number of inhabitants in the United States. If it were otherwise, there is much more responsibility in this government. Our representatives are chosen for 2 years. In Great Britain, they are chosen for 7. Any citizen may be elected here. In Great Britain, no one can be elected to represent a county without having an estate of the value of £600 sterling a year, nor to represent a corporation without an annual estate of £300. So if you understand, the House of Commons, the House of Lords, there were thresholds of wealth in representation in Britain. And this is so great, because in reading these things, they're actually covering the facts, the historical facts of how things were at the time. And Madison goes on and finalizes it by saying this: yet we are told there is no sympathy or fellow feeling between the people here and their representatives, but that in England they have both. A just comparison will show that if confidence be due to the government there, it is due tenfold here. And it's almost like, you know, that final comment was a slap in the face to all of these people that were, accusing the design of this government, the design of this constitution, as one not representing the people and so forth. To actually close out, though, these were not his final comments in this oration, this portion of his oration. There's a little note at the bottom of this, and I've said this before, that Madison at points in time and others, you know, spoke so softly that the scribes could not hear what they were saying audibly. And so the little note here says, Mr. Madison made many other observations, but spoke so very low that he could not be distinctly heard. So what they do is, if they can't capture it, they don't guess. But things that they actually heard, these men saying, they captured and wrote it down. And one of the books I read talked about how the criticism of these people kind of moved forward on and on in this concept of this government that we have. And so anyway, as you can tell, we're at another heartbreak. So we will be back after these two promos. I will expound a little bit more on this capturing of data and so forth, and why this is so important as soon as we get back. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so what I wanted to say, but we were going into break, and I didn't have necessarily the time and or the focus to actually share this with you. But when the ratification debates were done in most of the states, you know, they were pretty much, you know, there weren't a lot of complaints. However, Virginia was different. I'm not sure about New York, but I did know and I did learn that both sides, the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, weren't very happy with how they captured because there might have been, you know, a few things missed by Madison and or an Anti-Federalist when they were talking, but because they talked so small or so softly, and this was a large room. They didn't have, you know, this technology of microphones and speakers, that technology just didn't exist. So you had to speak so everybody could hear you. And that was a lot of work. Oration in those days was a lot more work than people give it credit. Or, you know, people don't acknowledge the effort of being a statesman back in those days. Shoot, nowadays you get a camera, a little microphone in front of you. You know, anybody can, you know, just babble on and on and on, just like yours truly. So anyway, it was a job being an orator, being a statesman back in those days. It was a lot of work because you had to belt out constantly. And so there, again, there was some negative sentiments from both sides of the aisle regarding this. But I am here to tell you that the accuracy and the things that were caught and, you know, the few things that were missed, there was nothing, zero, within all of these ratification debates that indicated that we are to have a living document, that we are to be, you know, be given and bestowed upon us this concept that the federal government is king of all things. That is not what these men talked about. They talked about how limited it was, how the states had all the remaining powers. Just like in a power of attorney, these are the only powers you've delegated. The rest are all yours to do with what you please. that the federal government or this general government could not consume or assume any power not delegated. And yet we have completely done a 180, and the general government is doing what they want to us. If we do not fix this problem, we, our children, our children's children, and our posterity will rue the day that we did not take this stand. The window is shutting. We only have so much time. Time is finite, my friends, and the Lord is only giving us so much time. And I'm here to tell you, I'm here to testify that it has been by the hand of the Lord that all of these insights have come forth for people to actually read for themselves and to acknowledge. There is no reason why any good patriot does not at least familiarize themselves with the ratification debates and what these words stated and what these mean. It is not beyond reason for a patriot to fathom and understand that it was not a coincidence that we were granted a compact amongst the states instead of creating this general omnipotent power to rule us. There's no coincidences in life, my friends, at least not in this government, not in our history. Our history was very meaningful, and it was very, it was with purpose. And history has only proven that if we take a stand, if we stand on the shoulders of our framers, our forefathers, if we stand on their shoulders with his constitution, we will be victorious. All we need to do is do it with faith, and we will be blessed, just like the framers witnessed, just like Washington saw firsthand so many interventions by the divine hand of providence. How could that man not be touched? I mean, from being able to escape from Back Bay in Boston, from being able to escape in New York under the clouds or the fog of the water early in the morning, or the fact that they survived winter quarters, or the fact that they crossed the Delaware and caught the Hessians completely off guard. I am telling you that these men acknowledge and recognize the divine hand of providence. If you want those types of profound experiences, all you've got to do is stand. I am seeing these. I'm experiencing these. And I know those who I'm working with are seeing and experiencing the exact same thing. Drink this in. This history is ours to write. For liberty and for our children and posterity. Anyway, Governor Randolph is up in the queue. Forgive me for the little rant there, but it must be said. And so Governor Randolph stated, "Mr. Chairman, our attention is summoned to this clause respecting the militia, and alarms are thrown out to persuade us that it involves a multiplicity of danger. It is supposed by the honorable gentleman lately up and another gentleman that the clause for calling forth the militia to suppress insurrections, repel invasions, and execute the laws of the Union implies that instead of using civil force in the first instance, the militia are to be called forth to arrest petty offenders against the laws. Ought not common sense be the rule of interpreting this Constitution? Is there an exclusion of the civil power? Does it provide that the laws are to be enforced by military coercion in all cases?" Now see, they're using militia, military, army, militia, all interchangeable because the militia was the army. "No, sir. All we are to infer is that the civil power is not sufficient. The militia must be drawn out." Or actually, let me rephrase that because I recognize that I probably mispronounced something here. "All that there is to infer is that when the civil power is not sufficient, the militia must be drawn out. Who are they?" He says, and I cheerfully acquiesce to the rectitude of his assertion, "They are the bulwarks of our liberties. Shall we be afraid that the people this bulwark of freedom will turn instruments of slavery. The officers are, and so if you understand, that's what we have now with this federal army. They are enforcing and enslaving us to doing things that they have no authority to do. Anyway, the officers are to be appointed by the states. Will you admit, we're, you know, the standing army that we have over us, that's all appointed by bureaucrats and people within the District of Columbia that have no elected authority. Will you admit that they will act so criminally as to turn against this country? This is the killer, my friends. No, they knew that those who were working to undermine our system knew that the militia would not, you know, turn against us. They knew that if the self-government system moved forward, they would not be able to undermine us. So that's why they marginalized the militia. That's why the Constitution is so egregiously violated that people are not even acknowledging, because we've been lied to and deceived in what this instrument and document means. That's why I'm going on another tangent, but that's why reading the ratification debates is like reading the scriptures. If you want to understand the Ten Commandments, you have to read the scriptures. More specifically, if you want to understand the Ten Commandments in context to Christ and Christianity, you have to also read both Old and New Testaments so you understand the context. And that's the same thing with all of these ratification debates. And I only have so much of them. I would love if somebody would bestow upon me the entire ratification debates that the University of Washington has, because I am so confident that there is no evidence of any contrary interpretation, any contrary definitions and terms of this Constitution. I am so confident that the truth is being hidden by the progressives of the education system. That's why they have a hefty fee, and that's why they're inaccessible. Because, and if you think about it, these are the records of the people. The government should actually step in and go to the University of Wisconsin and say, you must release all of this data and make it available and accessible online. Trump should actually force this down their throats instead of holding this barrier, because I can't afford these things. And that's only the hard copy. Getting the electronic copy of all of this stuff is even worse. Anyway, the officers of this is Governor Randolph again. The officers of the general government are attached to it because they derive their appointment from it. Admitting the militia officers to be corrupt, what is to make them in favor of the general government? Will not the same reason attach them to the state governments? But it is feared that the militia are to be subjected to martial law. And so there's that word again. When not in service. That is not the truth. We've already gone through this. They are to only be called out in three cases and to be governed by the authority of Congress when the actual service of the United States. So he's just basically repeating the exact same things, that martial law is incumbent upon the militia to be called out so that the articles of war can no longer operate upon them when in the actual service of the Union. So if you understand, they were very clear in defining, you know, the limitations of martial law. Martial law was dependent on the deployment of the militia. The federal government must call upon the militia to execute the laws of the unions, to repel invasions, and to stop insurrections. And so, my friends, anybody that has built an argument on saying that they've created all of this unconstitutional government under this veil of legal, legitimate martial law has bought into the big deceit in thinking that, oh, you know, we're all heading to heck in a handbasket. Well, we are, but not because they did it legitimately. We're heading in this direction because it has all been unconstitutional and illegitimate. I will be back right after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
I believe there's merit in repeating something. I am not here to be an entertainer. I know that there are lots of people that are very entertaining out there that really work on, you know, saying things that make you feel good. I am here to give you facts and illuminate the solution. If you're looking, if you're tired of the frustrations of things continually going bad and getting worse, and even though, yeah, Trump is doing some things that seem like they're really good, there's not one thing that has been undone. Prayer has not been returned to the education system. That wall and the constant flood of illegal immigrants is still coming across the border. I'm here to tell you that the president can't fix this problem. If you want the president to be able to do what the president should be doing, the states have to fix the problem. It's really simple, folks. You can't expect a monarchy from our constitutional system. You can't expect a democracy from our constitutional system to fix our problems. We have to use the Republican form of government that was created. We have to get back into that framework and get the states to take hold of their constitution. So I'm not here like, you know, the front benchers that most people tune into to, you know, help you just feel good about, you know, our job numbers are looking good. You know, to be honest with you, the federal government has no responsibility in creating jobs or even to even care about monitoring that to the level that they do. These things are only used as demagoguery to, you know, point out how bad this person is or how bad, you know, things are going, when it's not for the federal government. What we should be focused on is how is the economy of the 50 states within this republic? Where are the states that are, you know, exceeding expectations, and where are the states that are failing? That's what we need to be focused on. We need to be focused on the republic, not D.C. and the demagoguery from all of these different politicians. The Democratic field of candidates is nothing but a field of demagogues. That's what, you know, that just plays in hand with the Democrats and demagoguery. Almost sounds like they go together. To be honest, the Republicans deal in this same thing too. And in all honesty, if you understand what the other conservative entertainers are saying, it's all demagoguery. The fact of the matter is, we have solutions that are tangible and absolute. These solutions threaten all of these institutions and people that are a part of the problem. Because as I say, if those folks that are talking and entertaining you are not engaged in actually solving the problem of an unconstitutional government, then they're a part of the problem. It's that simple. And so, you know, there's only one show that can actually claim to take the high ground. Yeah, there are lots of shows that teach you about how bad things are, but they do not have an irrefutable argument of undoing Agenda 21. They do not have an irrefutable argument of undoing all of the unconstitutional government coming from that general government that was created by our Constitution. It's time to wake up, folks. It's called the Tour of Truth, and this is how we are reclaiming the Republic, is through the truth. And I'm hoping that I can get those who want to lead throughout America to begin the Tour of Truth. You know how that Trump had his tour of the Wall Tour, right? Kind of like a Pink Floyd band way back in the 80s, right? The Wall Tour. Well, Trump in 2016 did a tour on the wall. Well, let's stop making tours on little things that won't solve the real problem, and let's focus on the real problem, the tour of truth. And it's time we actually divulge and talk about and get engaged with the full truth, not just parts of it. Let me finish with what Mr. Randolph has said. Can it be presumed that you can vest the power of the United States with the power of defense and yet take away this natural defense from them? You risk the general defense by withholding this power. The honorable gentleman speaking of responsibility is mistaken. He says that the king cannot pardon offenders found guilty on impeachment. The king can pardon after impeachment, though not before. He says further, that in America, everything is concealed, whereas in England, the operations of the government are openly transacted. In England, those subjects which produce impeachments are not opinions. No man ever thought of impeaching a man of an opinion. It would be impossible to discover whether the error in opinion resulted from a willful mistake of the heart or an involuntary fault of the head. What are the occasions of impeachments most commonly? Treaties. Are these previously known? No. Till after they are presented to the public eye, they are not known. Those who advise a treaty are not known till then. There ought to be a publication on the subject of negotiations till they are concluded, so that when he thinks there is a greater notoriety in this case in England than here, I say he is mistaken. There will be much notoriety in America as in England, if not more. The spirit of the nation occasions the notoriety of their political operations, and not any constitutional requisition. The spirit of liberty will not be less predominant in America. I hope then there, with the respect to a standing army, I believe that there was not a member in the Federal Convention who did not feel indignation at such an institution. What remedy then could be provided? Leave the country defenseless? In order to provide for our defense and exclude the dangers of a standing army, the general defense is left to those who are the objects of defense. It is left to the militia, who will suffer if they become the instruments of tyranny. The general government must have power to call them forth when the general defense requires it. In order to produce greater security, the state governments are to appoint officers. The president who commands them when in actual service of the Union is appointed secondarily by the people. This is a further security. Now, technically, he's selected by the electors or representatives of the people. They did not have a popular vote for the president. Is it not incredible that men who are interested in the happiness of their country, whose friends, relations, and connections must be involved in the fate of their country, should turn against their country? I appeal to every man, whether if any of our own officers were called upon to destroy the liberty of their country, he believes they would assent to such an act of suicide. The state governments, having the power of appointing them, may elect men who are most remarkable to their venture or to their virtue of attachment of their country. Now, George Mason is the next person that actually speaks, and this is a long one, so I don't necessarily want to get into George Mason's comment and and when he gets into the militia and so forth. Mr. Clay, though, makes a comment that's worth stating, and this is right after Mason. He says he spoke, so they're pointing out that he spoke too low, but they said that Mr. Clay admitted that he might be mistaken with respect to the exclusion of the civil power in executing the laws, as it was insinuated that he was not under the influence of common sense in making the objection. His error might result from his deficiency in that respect. But he thought that another gentleman was as deficient in common decency as he was in common sense. Now, see, they're slinging these insults back and forth. He was not, however, convinced that the civil power would be employed if it was meant that the militia could not be called out to execute the laws in all cases. Why were they not satisfied with the words repel invasions, suppress insurrections? He thought the word insurrection included every opposition to laws, and if so, it would be insufficient to call forth and suppress insurrections without mentioning that they were to execute the laws of the Union. He added that although the militia officers were appointed by the state governments, yet as they were sworn to obey the superior power of Congress, no check or security would result from their nomination of them. And so here's Mr. Clay kind of throwing out these things, making an acknowledgement that, you know, he may not have some clarity, but slinging another insult at, you know, one of the Federalists. And I believe it was probably either Mr. Nicholas and or Randolph and or Madison himself. The fact of the matter remains that the militia, it was very, very clear that the militia was the integral part of enforcing the constitutional laws of the Union. And so with that, we will tune in tomorrow. And if you want to catch more of these insightful ratification debates, that's what we're covering. We'll be covering and hopefully wrapping them up tomorrow, if not the following episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.